Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
It's just money.
Blasphemy! This is madness!
I drink your milkshake!
Hey everybody, welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Katsumita, and I'm joined here with Brent Johnson, the man behind the dollar milkshake theory. If you are joining us for the first time and don't know what a dollar milkshake is or what the dollar milkshake theory is talking about, we've done our best to simplify a way to catch up with everybody. We have a playlist on our YouTube channel that says Start Here. There's an original presentation by Brent, a number of short clips accompany that will hopefully break everything down for you, take you down that rabbit hole. Something else worth mentioning as well, we are very sensitive to everybody's time and we know it's valuable. And when you're coming to a YouTube channel, especially one that maybe you don't quite know very well yet, it's sometimes drinking from the fire hose, and sometimes you're just trying to dive in and choose which piece of content to get started with. Well, we break everything into segments. So every video we do when we're publishing it, it's trying to achieve a very specific objective. So as you scroll through our YouTube channel, you'll see we have unique thumbnails for each one of those segments. We do a Monday peek of the week, which is more or less a look ahead. We tend to sometimes, if it makes sense, do a midweek update. We have a Madness Edition segment, which is really just us getting silly about all the craziness that goes on in the world. Hey, if you're not really a markets person, maybe that's where you start. If you're more of a markets person, please stay away. It doesn't always jive with everybody. And we've actually even introduced a new segment called What Would Johnson Do? WWJD. It's going to be a fun one that we will continue to develop, where we get Brent's thoughts if he was placed in various situations or given options in certain circumstances. So that's my spiel and welcome you to the show. We want to make sure everyone has as much fun with this as we are having making it, but we also want to make sure we respect your time. So in this video, we're going to do our full length. We get a little deeper into the markets. Maybe one or two topics. We peel back the layers a little bit more. Brent, what do you have to say about the week that just passed? Anything jump out to you so far?
Well, yeah, you know, I think in last week's episode, I think we said that, you know, this week was, even though it didn't have a ton of data, it was fairly important because it was going to be the last, you know, week with some important readings until the Fed meeting. And, you know, of course, you know, everybody knows that the Fed has been laser focused on inflation. We had a couple, we had CPI this week. And so CPI was a big thing that everybody was looking for. And it came in a little bit hotter than expected. And initially the market sold off. Here's what the market sold off, even though, they sold off because there was a little more hawkish than expected. But then when people kind of started to dig into the weeds of the headline, maybe it wasn't quite so bad. And then markets kind of rallied on the back of that. And then yesterday PPI came out, and PPI exceeded as well, but not by too much. And it was kind of in line. And so, you know, yesterday was a fairly big up day. But then this afternoon, markets all sold off pretty hard into the close. And so the markets, whereas they were initially up for the first 3 to 4 days of the week, I think most of them closed it as a negative week, maybe not significantly negative, but down from where they started on Monday for sure. And I think a little lower than they were last Friday. So I think, you know, I was kind of expecting inflation to come in perhaps a little bit, you know, in line to maybe a little bit high. I still think that the Fed is going to hike next week. And so this week's data kind of supported that, I thought, because, you know, if the Fed is data dependent, more data came in this week that said the job's not over. So we'll have to wait and see what they do.
I think since July, you've at least expressed some level of confidence that you thought the Fed would hike in September. So now that, you know, the data has continually shown up to at least give them an excuse to do another 25 basis points, it will be interesting. But one of the things we've also talked about pretty consistently the last couple months is, if you go back to 2022, July was the 40-year high print. I think it was a 9.1% year-over-year change in inflation. So now when you go an entire year forward from that, 2022 into 2023, that rate of change you would expect isn't going to be as dramatic. Now, when you're looking at CPI and certainly the data we've had the last couple months, if you get rid of the extreme readings of last year, wouldn't you say that this is still, generally speaking, somewhat of a hot inflation print? Like it's
sure.
And forget expectations for a minute, just as the core numbers are indicating, and forget, oh, well, it's, you know, it's a big reduction from last year. Wouldn't if you were a central banker in this particular case, wouldn't you feel like, hey, maybe we should add another 25 basis points?
Yeah, and so this is where it gets kind of interesting, John, because and here's the reason is because the market is not expecting them to hike next week, even though, you know, he has been very clear that it's data dependent, and even though the data has tended to come in a little bit on the or the readings have exceeded a little bit. And been slightly hawkish. They haven't been dramatically hawkish. But this is where, but 98%, the market is saying there's a 98% chance that they don't hike and only a 2% chance that they do. So by me saying that they're going to hike, it's definitely against consensus. And this is where I'm going to point this out because I talk about this all the time. And this is where it gets a little bit, you have to be careful of letting your biases overrule what's actually going to happen. Because how many times have I said, forget what you think they should do, forget what you want them to do, what are they actually going to do, right? That's when you're managing money and trying to increase the size of your portfolio, what they are actually going to do is much more important than what you think they should do or what you want them to do. And so I will admit that this is a very close call for me. I'm trying my best to be as neutral as possible. The reason I'm saying that they're going to hike is because I think overall the economy is holding up pretty well. The data has exceeded expectations. I know for a year and a half now, he's been hiking rates and everybody said he was going to stop even though he didn't. And I think last time when he skipped a hike, I think the markets kind of started to call his bluff a little bit, right? And I think if he skips another one, he's in danger of the market really calling his bluff. And if he was to skip here, and then we get into October, and for whatever reason, despite what everybody believes is, you know, maybe there's a recession around the corner or whatever it is, if inflation comes in hot again, and there's not an October Fed meeting, right? And he's got to wait for November, I think if he doesn't hike, he has there's the opportunity that inflation reaccelerates. Again, I actually don't think that inflation is going to reaccelerate, but if I'm sitting in Powell's shoes and I'm thinking about what could lead inflation to reaccelerate and how I am going to look if inflation reaccelerates after all the work that I have done to put the transitory madness behind me, and hiked from 0% to 5.5% in 18 months when nobody thought I would do more than one or two hikes. I kind of feel like one more hike isn't going to change that much. And it gives him a lot of, it helps his credibility tremendously if he hikes one more time. And I don't think it hurts that much by hiking one more time. Now here's the flip side. And this is why I say it's very close. And this is why most people don't think they're going to hike. Is if you look at the data from a year ago, it had the inflationary data has been slowing, right? Now, to your point, it is still high, but it's much lower than it was a year ago. And the trend seems to be that prices are coming down. And the markets have held up remarkably well. Again, I think we've talked about this several times. I think when he started his hiking cycle, he thought he would have to cause a recession to get inflation to come back down to the level it is. But now we're 18 months into it. Markets are basically, I don't know, flat to 5% down from when he started. And I think he can probably see the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit, and he might actually believe that he can pull off this soft landing. And then the other part of it is that by just stopping, not hiking, but staying higher for longer is tightening. And what I mean by that is, part of the reason I think the market has held up as well as it has is though, even though rates have dramatically increased, there's a lag effect from when interest rates are increased to the time they hit the market. And I think as we move forward in time and more car lease payments, rental agreements, anything that has a fixed rate term on financing, and as those things get refinanced at the now higher levels, that has a tightening effect. So if we just sat at these levels for a year, which I know a lot of people don't even think that will happen, but if we sat at these levels for a year and things got refinanced, you know, every month for the next year, that in itself would create tightening pressure on the economy. And so I think that's, and I think a lot of people think that's where we're at, and that's why we're not going to get another hike. If I had to place the odds, I'd say it's like, 55, that they're going to hike, and 45 that they're not. I think it's very close, but I actually think that they are going to hike.
I mean, data dependent, right? I feel like perhaps I'm right. In an echo chamber where you and I are having these conversations. Partly that echo chamber continues into a place like Twitter, where a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing in my feed is a bit more, maybe I'll say objective about the data. I saw a chart that Paul Krugman had posted, who's a joke of an economist, talking about how, look, inflation is down, but he basically removed everything from all the components, from shelter to fuel to you name it. So it's just, so I get the data dependent argument, and we kind of coined before the idea that, we have this lag effect. We called it the lag boys, because anytime we talk about monetary policy and stuff that was going on in the economy, we'd get a ton of comments of like, everything's on a lag. Everything's on a lag. You'll see it. The world's coming to an end in 12 months. So I get all that. But I guess what my question or volley back to you would be is, when I look at the data, and we're talking about even considering the lag effect, so whether it's commercial real estate or whatever the leases and things that are ultimately going to be refinanced or affected by where pricing is today and the cost of credit is today. Well, if the cost of credit today, just based on, say, the Fed funds, is 5.5%, I don't see how 5.75 is going to, be the straw that breaks the camel's back. But contrary to that, in the present now, without considering lag, we still have really hyped up animal spirits. So when you're looking at the way asset markets are performing, and you've said this a number of times, the reason why, besides bonds, but the reason why the Fed is raising rates and enacting this aggressive monetary policy is because they want to bring the price and the value of collateral down. They want asset prices to come down. So I feel like in the near term, if the Fed pauses, the impact to everything, like you just said, everything he's been able to achieve up until this point feels like it's thrown out the door versus the risk of adding another 25 basis points. So what, I understand what you're saying, what the market is saying, that there's maybe this 50-50 coin flip that they're going to do, but what is really the Fed's concern for doing another 25 basis points, at least in my eyes, besides the banks getting crushed even more?
Well, I think this, the main thing would be that, again, right now it's not a coin flip. Right now it is 98% says he is not going to hike, and only like 2 or 3% say he is. And so if he hikes next week, that is going to be a surprise to the markets in general. It might not be a surprise to you and me, but in general, that is going to be a surprise to the markets. And I think, and he has typically not done a surprise to the market. If you look back at his decisions, they are almost always what the consensus thinks it's going to be. And that's partly because they jawbone the markets to kind of get consensus to be ready for their picks. So if he hikes next week, this would be the first time he kind of went against consensus. Other than way back in 2018, when he hiked the rates a lot in 2018. And he did one last hike in December of 2018, which a lot of people didn't think he needed to do, and the markets just puked. That's when, I don't know if you remember, that's when Mnuchin got on the phone on Christmas Day with all the bankers, and coming out of, then the next day on December 26th, the markets rallied like crazy because the banks were going to be there and the Fed was going to be there to do whatever they needed to do. On the one hand, the history says Powell doesn't surprise the markets. But what That's the very intermittent history. The longer history says he always goes too far. In 2018, he went too far, the markets punished him. And then with QE, he went too far, and the markets punished him with inflation. And now, you know, so I kind of feel like, and this is, maybe this is just a gut feeling, because again, I admit that it's very, very close, but I kind of feel like this is his chance to kind of bolster his credibility, right? And because if he doesn't hike, his credibility is going to take a little bit of a hit. Even though the market's not expecting him to hike, I think if he doesn't, I think his credibility takes a... I guarantee you, if he doesn't hike in the Q&A session, the press conference part of the Fed meeting, there will be multiple questions about, well, if you're data dependent and the data has exceeded, why didn't you hike? And he'll have to dance, you know, a pretty nice little jig there in order to answer those. And so again, it's going to be very, very close, but I say he's going to hike.
So you've said before, sometimes, and it's kind of been a theme for you this week, sometimes you play the hand, sometimes you play the man. So it sounds like in this particular case, you're getting into the head of the player and you're playing the man.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
So while we're on the topic of inflation, we have not yet jumped on what has been an interesting kind of trend in market data, which it's politics, it's market data, it's kind of all of that, which is the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and some of the things that have been going on with oil prices. Because, you know, not to backtrack on everything we just talked about, but, you know, oil prices getting into the nine handle suddenly, you know, gives, I would say, Fed further reason to hike. Do you want to talk a little bit about the SPR, some of the things that are going on there? We have been really, really focused so far at the start of this conversation about markets, but I think some of your takes on the political nature of SPR might be a better place to start.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting too. I don't know if you saw this, John, but I actually shorted some oil the other day. And today I bought puts on Exxon. And this does kind of relate to the whole Fed meetings. Again, I think that he will be more hawkish than people are expecting him to be. And I think he's probably going to raise rates. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that oil falls, right? You could certainly have oil going up with them hiking. So this is not a direct correlation. But I just kind of feel like the big move, so oil is currently at its highest level of the year, right? And it's had a pretty big move up over the last couple months. And I think it was was it 70, 75 bucks a couple of months ago, and now it's at 90 or 91 today. And so, you know, I think if he, you know, if, again, this goes to why, if oil were to continue to 100, you're going to start having some inflationary pressures again. Anyway, going back to the SPR, part of the reason that I think that oil is going to sell off is I think it's come a long way very fast. I think the economy is slowing. I don't think it's necessarily falling off a cliff right now, but I think the economy is slowing. That could lead to some demand destruction for oil. Right now, some of these different exhaustion signals that I look at and relative strength signals that I look at are telling me that this is a good time for oil to pause. And then also, I think it won't surprise me at all if Biden sells even more from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And so now we're getting back to your question. So, and I think if all that happened, I think it wouldn't surprise me if oil pulled back 5, 10 bucks, 20 bucks, whatever it is. Again, I think oil, just for the record, so I don't get a million comments, I think oil is going much, much higher in the years ahead. Okay? But this is just a short-term trade. Anyway. Let's get back to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago, you know, I tweeted out this thing that said, at the very top, you know, unpopular opinion. Biden's use of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve has worked perfectly, and this is exactly the type of situation that it was created for in the first place. And oh boy, people did not like that. And I knew it would be unpopular, and I wanted to, you know, but the point I wanted to make, number one, is I actually believe it. Number two, I knew it would drive some people crazy. But number three, it's really interesting what's going on, and it's really interesting to understand what the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is, why it was created, who created it, and what it was created for. And the parallels to what's going on now are extremely similar. Okay, so let's talk about what the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was. So in 1973, the Organization of Arab Petroleum Exporting Countries did an embargo where they stopped supplying oil to the rest of the world. The reason they did this was because of their perceived they were upset that the U.S. supported they perceived that the U.S. supported Israel when Israel went to war with Egypt and who else did Egypt go to war with, Israel and I think Egypt and was it Saudi no it wasn't Saudi Arabia anyway it doesn't matter so there was a war during Yom Kippur in October of 1973, and so the OPEC felt like the U.S. supported them, Israel, against Egypt, and they didn't like that. So they stopped exporting oil. And this led to huge supply imbalances, and it led to skyrocketing oil prices. It led to gas lines. And so, you know, what you have to remember what was going on in the world. Then just 2 years prior, the U.S. had delinked the dollar from gold. So while they were still the strongest country in the world, there was, you know, some rumblings, kind of like now. You know, you had these countries were saying, hey, that's not what we signed up for. And what's going on now? Hey, this is not what we signed up for. And then the reason that we had a potential supply shock a year and a half ago was because of a reaction to an invasion of Russia to Ukraine, right? And then Russia said, well, if you are, you know, if you're going to take their side, then we are not going to supply you with oil. So the parallels are not dissimilar. They're not exactly the same. And I know I'm going to get some messages, these are not the same. Okay, you're right. They're not exactly the same, but they are sort of related. And but if we go back to 1973, you know, in Nixon had just been reelected in, I think it was 72. And so the next election was up for 76. So Nixon wasn't up for reelection, but Ford was his vice president, you know, and no president wants to go out as an unpopular president who caused a recession and, you know, whose international policies or economic policies led to layoffs and gas lines and such. So, in 73, the whole Nixon administration was gung-ho trying to figure out how to solve this deal. Now, they ended up doing the dollars for oil deal with Saudi Arabia, which said, you know, the U.S. is going to protect Saudi Arabia, and in exchange, Saudi Arabia will not only start exporting oil again, but they'll only do it in dollars. And that led to the petrodollar. Okay? But if you look, and so this was, but at the same time, so before that was done, Nixon started to impact or introduce policies that would keep this from happening again. So he encouraged policies to increase production in Texas and other oil-producing areas. And they started, I don't remember if this happened under Nixon or Ford, but, you know, that's where the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit comes from. I don't know if people know that. It's not a safety thing. It's a gas efficiency thing to keep gas prices down. And gas, so that's where the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit comes from. And under Nixon, they started talking about building up this, you know, strategic supply. So if there was ever an economic impact of a surprise supply shortage, this was never a strictly military thing. In fact, so a lot of people think that the SPR is only for economic, or that they only think it's for national emergencies. And if we get invaded and it's a wartime thing. It is not a wartime thing. It was never a wartime thing. It could be a wartime thing, but it was never once exclusively a wartime thing. In fact, the military had their own Strategic Petroleum Reserve that they managed for decades. Now, that's actually been phased out over the last, call it 10 or 15 years. But during this time, they had their own Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So this was more economic related. And the whole point is it was supposed to be used for surprise supply disruptions. Okay, so a year and a half ago, when Putin said he was no longer going to supply energy to the rest of the world, that is a supply disruption. And when Biden talked about using the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, it was to counter that supply disruption. Now, since then, oil stayed pretty low, right? It didn't, you know, I think it was at 130 at one point, and, you know, like we just talked a couple months ago, it was at $70. And so if he would not have done that, where would oil prices have been? Well, I don't know. Nobody does. But the point is that that's what it was used for. It, whether you think it helped or not, oil prices didn't spike. Country didn't go into a recession. There were not long gas lines. And now people are saying, well, let's see how it ends. Okay, now here's where I agree with you. It probably doesn't end well, but up to now, it has done exactly what it was supposed to do. And so it'll be really interesting to see what happens from here. The other thing that's changed over the 50 years from when the Strategic Petroleum, oh, by the way, it didn't actually come in until Ford. It started, the discussion started it, you know, back when Nixon was still the president. But then when Nixon resigned and Ford took over in early 1975, Ford is the one that signed the deal that made it an actual program. And it, by the way, it gives the power to the president to decide. You know, Congress doesn't get to decide. The military doesn't get to decide. It's not a congressional program. It's not a military program. It's at the president's discretion to use for economic reasons in case of a supply shock. So now supply, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is a lot lower than it was 50 years ago, right? And they've used up a lot of it. It wouldn't surprise me if Biden uses it even more as we head into an election next year. But this doesn't mean that it ends well, right? And in fact, it could end really, really badly. But the one thing that the U.S. does have going for it is that 50 years ago, we didn't produce that much oil and we were a huge importer. Now we are the biggest energy producer in the world and we export a lot of oil. If push really came to shove, you know, we could produce oil for ourselves. And if we stopped exporting oil, you know, people talk about what happened, you know, what a nightmare it would be if Russia stopped exporting oil. Well, what if the U.S. stopped exporting? That would cause some problems as well. So that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. The SPR was an economic program given to the president for economic reasons, a power given to the president for economic reasons. Biden used it. I don't think he should have, but he did. And it worked, and we'll see where it goes from here.
So just so everyone's clear, what Brent just described is fact, not conspiracy. And if you want some conspiracy, I highly recommend you check out our Madness Edition video, which we'll be posting here at the start of the week. we go down some conspiracy rabbit holes. So it's really interesting, you know, that backdrop. And I feel like, as extreme as it may be, the U.S., government, military, et cetera, could always nationalize various oil fields and what have you if it became truly wartime or even just some other type of crisis, even if it was just economic. One of the things also worth pointing out too is, you know, I think some of the knee-jerk reaction to really disappointment in the oil price for those who are very, very bullish oil is like, oh, well, they're manipulating the price with the SPR. It's the same conversation around, oh, well, they're manipulating gold with paper gold contracts. It's like, well, you know, they're only manipulating these things when the price goes down. They're never manipulating them when the price goes up. And if you're such a market wizard and you know this manipulation is going on, how are you unable to profit in both directions? So it's something to keep in mind before, which we talk about a lot on the show, before you lose your mind about what is going on and the impact on price. And one of the things I think Brent always does such a phenomenal job of doing is bringing some color and context as to why these things are happening, so you don't get caught up in that should and and various vocabulary like that.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, I had a couple people come back to me and say that it was never about manipulating the price. It was true. It was all about supply. Well, the whole reason that you would use supply is because of price. Again, supply, demand, and price, they all go together. So, you know, if somebody, you know, didn't like me saying it was a price control, well, supply impacts price. And the only reason that you would increase supply is to keep price down. So again, the last point I would make is if this was just a wartime thing, then the power would have been given to the Congress, because Congress has to pass, has to agree to go to war. It can't just be the president. And if it was strictly a military program, then, you know, the Joint Chiefs of Staff or somebody at the Army or the Navy or the Air Force would have had the control over it. Again, this was an economic program given to the power of the president. By the way, this is one thing, I'm just going to throw this out there. The president has the power to sell the oil, but if they're going to refill it, that has to be an act of Congress, because they have to authorize the spending to go buy the oil.
Well, we'll have to see how well that goes, because we know Congress is agreeing on everything these days, and they're so good at picking up sweetheart deals in the stock market. Let's see if they know how to pick up some sweetheart deals when it comes to the oil price. Now, we've talked about inflation at the beginning of this show. We talked about CPI. We've also talked about some of the things that are going on in international markets, whether it's the politics behind the SPR, oil prices in general. I figure before we wrap up this full-length episode, one of the things that we should highlight on is that this past week, we also did have the ECB, European Central Bank, rate hike decision. They did raise interest rates. And at the same time, we had a conversation from Tucker Carlson, who's now doing the show on Twitter, where he went deep dive into flagrant monetary policies and the impact of such with hyperinflation in Argentina. So one of the things that would be great if you could bring some color to, Brent, is not only your thoughts on the ECB rate hike decision, but now that, you know, Tucker Carlson, with the audience he has brought Argentina back into the conversation we had earlier in the year, did some discussion around that since you were there. So it'd be good for you to maybe have some reflection on both of those things.
Sure. Well, if we go back to last week's episode, we discussed that the ECB was going to have a meeting this week. And I said at the time that I thought it was probably their opportunity to hike one last time, or at least be hawkish one last time. But I thought that after that, it would be kind of tough, because I don't think that they're going to be able to do it for much longer. And sure enough, you know, they hiked, but they kind of, you know, hinted that they're probably done. Right. And that's how the market took it. And the euro sold off pretty hard. Now, you know, I even said last week that this would have been a good place for the dollar to pull back. It kind of made sense that the dollar, you know, the dollar was up 8 weeks in a row. It was, you know, I expected the Fed to hike, or I expected the ECB to hike. And so, you know, I kind of thought that the euro might kind of rally a little bit this week. But, you know, when the ECB came out and kind of hinted that they were done hiking, boy, that thing fell off. And, you know, the dollar made another high this week. So, you know, this is the important thing to understand. It doesn't always just matter what the U.S. is doing with regard to the dollar. You got to consider what everybody else is doing. So the dollar had another strong week. And so here's where it gets interesting as it relates to Argentina. And, you know, I think it's probably 6 weeks ago now, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 8 weeks since we got back from Argentina. You know, we talked on a couple episodes about Argentina. And Tucker Carlson is down there interviewing the potential presidential or one of the presidential candidates, and somebody who's gotten a lot of popular support, who is talking about dollarizing the country. And I know for a lot of people who follow the markets closely here and who follow monetary policy and, you know, all the bailouts and all the quote unquote money printing that the U.S. has done, and, you know, the fears that the dollar is going to lose, you know, its global reserve currency status, and it's going to get inflated away. It's understandable as an American who perhaps hasn't traveled and perhaps hasn't done business other places to kind of have that view, because this is the only economy that perhaps that they're familiar with. But what people don't realize is that people in countries all over the world, not in the U.S., view the U.S. dollar as a hard currency, at least harder than their own local currency. And that is absolutely the case in places like Turkey. It's true in places like Lebanon. It's true in places like, you know, Indonesia. But in some ways, it's true in places like South Africa or India. But where it's absolutely the truth is in Argentina. And, you know, I saw this firsthand when I went and I saw people and I spoke with people. I spoke with, you know, ordinary citizens. I spoke with a couple business people. And the first thing they do when they get paid is they immediately go buy dollars. And it's about, do some people buy gold? Sure, some people buy gold. Do some people buy Bitcoin? Sure, some people buy Bitcoin. But everybody, literally everybody, buys dollars. And so that's why Tucker Carlson is down there talking to this guy, because this guy is talking about, we need to bring some fiscal restraint back to the country of Argentina. Because if you think our country is out of control and our politicians are out of control, you should see what they're doing in Argentina. I mean, their currency was way down when I was there. And in the, you know, 6 weeks since I've been there, it's down another 30%. So, you know, they are hungry for using dollars, and any transaction in Argentina that's more than like $1,000 takes place in dollars. It doesn't even take place in Argentinian pesos. You know, if you're going to buy a bicycle or a car, or you stay in a hotel, you know, a house, it all takes place in dollars. It doesn't take place in pesos. And so that's kind of, and so they've been experiencing this for a long time. And so that, and because the populace is suffering at the hands of the monetary authorities and the politicians, this populist, you know, guy who's, you know, he's very much a capitalist. He's very much against socialism. He's kind of comes from the Austrian school of economics, I guess is the right way to say it. And the people are kind of rallying around him because he's calling out the politicians who have put all these policies in place. And, you know, they are tired of dealing with it all the time. Like, literally, if you go out to dinner in Buenos Aires and you're going to pay in pesos and you're going to pay in cash, you got to carry a briefcase with you to do it. I mean, I'm exaggerating slightly, but not by much. I mean, you know, $50 in $50 worth of pesos is like a big wad of cash. You know, you look like a gangster walking around with your big, you know, fat wad of cash with a rubber band around it. But, you know, it doesn't buy you a whole lot. And so it's interesting to see what's going on there, having been there to witness it personally. And that, to be honest, this is kind of one of the reasons that we decided to go there. One of the reasons we decided to go there is we heard it was just a beautiful country. We heard our dollar would go a long way there. And I wanted to kind of experience it firsthand. And it is really kind of amazing to have been there and now come back and see what's going on politically.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting when another country, well, it goes back to everything we've talked about with Euro dollar markets, but when a country adopts the dollar as their currency, this has been a thing with El Salvador. You know, they've made Bitcoin legal tender to kind of give them more flexibility. And obviously a limited supply situation like that where they don't control it doesn't necessarily give them total flexibility, but it's another option for them. But countries like Ecuador and you know, potentially if Argentina does it, it does rein them in, right? Because they can't just print away their problems and inflate the currency away. But at the cost of that, and it's interesting because he is such an animated populist type of candidate. And for my entertainment purposes, perhaps only, I would love to see him become the president. But if they adopt the dollar, the austerity that then gets forced on everyone in that country, I'm not sure if people really calculated that in their head, because it's going to be painful.
Yeah, it will definitely be painful. But in many ways, that would then clear out the rot and then allow them to have a relatively stable currency from which they could start to grow again. And in many ways, I think, if I were to like map this out 20, 30 years, it'll end up not working, right? Because again, this would essentially be a currency peg. It would eventually break and, you know, it wouldn't ultimately be successful, but you could have a long period of time where it could actually bring great prosperity to Argentina, because what it would do is it would remove the currency risk from investing in the country. And then this is a good example of what's happened in China with Hong Kong and China, the Hong Kong peg and the yuan peg. You know, the fact that people could invest in that country that had the potential to grow very fast and remove the currency risk from it allowed people to get more comfortable with investing like that. I think if Argentina were to dollarize, it would lead to massive foreign direct investment into the country. And while there would definitely be some growing pains, it would ultimately lead to great growth and probably some prosperity for a number of years.
I don't know anybody who knows anything about Argentina who doesn't like it, doesn't like the people, and doesn't truly wish that it could fix this one problem. So your point's really valid. If the currency risk wasn't a factor, I could see a lot of foreign investment coming in. And, you know, geopolitically, there's been a lot of talk when you're looking at the situation that we have in this part of the world, where the alliances that we have to the north of us, to the south of us, and then all the potential trade opportunities we have with South America. Chile was really kind of our best friend in a lot of cases with trade routes and other types of things. It was the strongest economy in South America, and that got all blown to bits. And a lot of people don't realize that going into COVID or into 2020, we had massive riots in Hong Kong, and we had massive riots in Chile, and then suddenly this virus breaks out. But the end result for Chile was this prospect of writing a new constitution. They've brought in delegates from all over different places around Chile, and those delegates for a long time were just arguing about how much money they can make, and not much has come of that. And it scared a lot of that business development. And, you know, the Colombian peso has been very, very weak, despite how great Colombia is to visit, to live, to consider investing in. So Argentina's kind of, you know, it's South America has one of those cleanest, dirty shirts opportunity for a country like Argentina to take advantage of.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting how to see how it plays out. Again, I think to me, this just really highlights that as many problems as we have here in the U.S., and listen, there are many, you travel to these other countries and you realize that on many ways we have it pretty good. And maybe things aren't quite as bad here as they are overseas. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Argentina ends up dealing with this, and if they do end up dealing with it by dollarizing. You know, we might have to start our whole dollarization rather than de-dollarization meme.
Well, we started out with inflation. It looked dire for us at the start of the conversation. We got into SBR, continued to look a little bit dire for us, and then no better way than to feel good about yourself than having a bookend to the conversation by bringing Argentina into it. So I'm feeling good about being an American after this 40-minute conversation. Hopefully everybody's feeling good about the future in both asset markets and in their own personal lives. It's going to be another crazy week with the with the monetary policy decision from the Fed. So stay tuned for that. We'll have a Monday peek at the week here in about a day that you can get all your insights and heads up on what's coming this week, including the Fed rate decision. So Brent, that was a very insightful conversation. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. If you want to follow Brent on Twitter, you can do so at Santiago AU Fund. You can follow me at John Kutzmita. You can follow the show at Milkshakes Pod. You can find us at milkshakespod.com. And Milkshakes Pod is our handle on YouTube as well, where we have all kinds of videos, segments nicely broken down for you, different thumbnails so you know exactly the type of video and content that you're getting. If you're still not sure based on the name of the segment, the thumbnail, please take a minute to look at the video description, because we're also very clear about what you're getting there as well. Brent, any last words before we end the weekend?
No, next week's going to be a big week, so get some rest, and we'll see you next week.
All right, guys. We look forward to seeing everybody here in a couple days. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.